Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. Today we're talking about something which I only really discovered, or maybe I only really discovered the power of in my 30s. We're talking about sisterhood, that deep-rooted innate bond between women. It's that unspoken understanding and the alliance, and I guess that powerful connection that emerges when you just put women in the same place together. It's when women come together and they're protecting and they're uplifting and they're taking care of each other. And it's not out of obligation. It's more out of a kind of, I guess, shared understanding or a shared reality of the way that we move through the world. It's that kind of unspoken feeling that says, you know, I understand and I've got you. And we grew up with so much media that told us to pit women against each other, whether it was like, you know, teenage films where two women are fighting over trying to get the same guy, or Cruel Intentions, for example, when there's kind of a man playing the mastermind and pitting people against each other. Even the very classic Mean Girls, and don't get me wrong, I love Mean Girls, but a lot of these kind of 90s, noughties films that we grew up watching, they really pit women against each other, and it feels like all of it is rooted in competition, and often competition around men in reality. And then there's also this competition when it comes into the workforce as well. I think when I was first working, I remember we had a female CEO, and there was always this narrative of like, oh, okay, well, to be a female CEO, you have to be like a real bitch. You've got to be super hard. You've got to take on all the qualities of a man. And that only by doing that would a woman ever get to the top. And then when you get to the top, there's this kind of feeling, I guess, or it's posed in this way that there's only space for one woman. There's only one woman's seat at the table. And so you have to kind of elbow people out the way because that's your space and you're the one woman who's going to make it. Really, in the way that we grew up, the default position with other women and the context is often competition. That's the lens that we've been shown to kind of look at female relationships through. Unless you unlearn all of this. And honestly, for me, I think it's actually, if I'm brutally honest, being the last year and a half that I've really unpicked this in myself. I think whether it is going to a party and, you know, seeing how good looking the other girls are, that comparison, or comparing my career to other women, or this kind of slightly innate, I guess, competition. It's literally only the last year that I've really unpicked that in myself. And now I'm able to kind of go into groups of women and just be very open and honest and, I guess, really show up there as like a true supporter rather than someone who maybe paints on that face but doesn't really feel it deep inside. And for me personally, this mindset shift has, I don't even know if it was a really conscious thing, to be honest. It wasn't like I was working towards it, but this shift that happened has just opened me up. And I've met so many incredible women in the last 6 months, and be that through co-working days or going to more events. I really feel like now I can show up in the room and I don't feel so self-conscious because I'm not comparing myself and I'm not kind of rooted in competition anymore. It feels like at 33, I'm finally like reveling in all the glory and the connection and this like deep-rooted support that you can have from sisterhood. And this is what we get into today. My guest's name is Heidi, and she is honestly just a ray of sunshine as a human being. She's got quite a few different strings to her bow. For example, she's a sound healer and she does these sound bath events, which are honestly incredible. I went to one for the summer solstice eve and it was delightful. And at one point she started singing and it was just like the best thing that I've ever been to. Honestly, it was so relaxing and incredible. She also holds women's circles, which we'll get into exactly what that is in the episode. But a lot of her work is rooted in exactly this, in sisterhood, in female energy, in this kind of divine female power and connection. In this episode, Heidi talks about her work and really how she got drawn to that kind of very focused area. She also talks about her experience with an eating disorder. We don't go into lots of detail on this, but if it's something you might not feel comfortable listening to, just bear that in mind whether you want to hear the rest of the episode. But we talk about that and how through her journey of healing, she really had to unpick a lot of kind of masks that she'd put on and a lot of ways that she was moving through the world, which wasn't her authentic self, but actually was perhaps a cause by or a kind of side of her eating disorder. She talks about how through her journey of recovery, she's been able to take off these masks and really examine who she is as a woman without thinking about who she has to be for other people. And personally, I found it really inspiring. She's just a real joy of a woman, and I feel very honoured to have her in my kind of wider female circle, and I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. If you feel that maybe you need to awaken your feminine power, or you're looking to connect to women on a slightly deeper level, then this episode is for you. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Heidi, welcome to the beige couch.
Thank you.
I was really excited to see what you're going to wear because you've been doing a lot of dopamine dressing on your Instagram.
I have. I'm not very colourful today compared to normal, but...
I like this though a lot, okay. But I was like, yes, you've been doing a lot of colour. And obviously today the weather
is very
shit.
Grey.
So yeah. I was like, oh, I hope...
Sorry.
I was like, not the outfit. But I was like, I hope that she's wearing something.
Right.
She can find something for the dopamine dressing despite the weather.
Yeah, always.
I mean, you are dopamine as a person, so that's probably easy for you to do. I don't even have anything dopamine-y or colour.
I've just got my summer. I think you can dopamine dress without it being colourful, though, as well.
Yeah.
It's just what brings you joy, right?
Just black.
Fine.
Dark.
Fine.
My
You've got
blacks.
A shoulder out.
Yeah, I've got one shoulder out today for anyone listening, not watching.
Yes.
I want to kick off with what you do, because I wouldn't know how to describe it, so I'd love for you to get into it.
It is hard to describe. I guess on a really base level, I'm a sound healer, so I hold sound baths. I am a yoga teacher, and I also hold women's circles, or lots of other stuff kind of pertaining to that as well. So I hold women's circles, I hold retreats for women, I hold events, spaces, communities, essentially everything that I do, all of that. It's basically all about, for me anyway, the intention behind it is always all about bringing you home to yourself, really, like a space, whether that is through like embodied movement or yoga, whether it's through a sound bath to reset your nervous system, to give you space to like feel what you're feeling and think what you're thinking, or whether that is through connecting to other women, through sisterhood, through circles, through practices, through conversation to, yeah, teach you more about yourself and reconnect you to who you are, like your authentic true self. Outside of all the external noise, basically.
Amazing. And how would you define a women's circle? Because I'm like, okay, I kind of have a vague idea because of people I've met in the last like year or so, but I think a lot of our listeners wouldn't know what a women's circle is.
Yeah, totally. I think a lot of people think it's like a cult or...
Yeah, like, it's giving coven.
It's giving coven, which I'm for,
it.
Yeah. 100% for the coven. But it's not. It is... It's basically a space where... You sit in a circle, hence it's called a women's circle. You don't have to be in a circle. But where you might do various things, often in a women's circle, and I'm sure other people who facilitate these spaces do them in different ways. But for me, the main part of the circle is that we share. So we each have a turn to speak, sometimes on a specific topic or question, or sometimes literally just like, how are you feeling? What's going on for you? And you each have a time to speak that is unfiltered. It's untimed. No one's going to judge you. No one's going to repeat what you say outside of that circle. There's certain like rules that keep the space safe.
Right.
So you just have an opportunity to share whatever comes into your mind, basically. And that can be like massively cathartic for the person speaking. But I think also for the people listening in that space, we all kind of hold space for each other. And the people listening, like every single time I step into those spaces, every single person that speaks, I relate to something they say. Like I see myself mirrored in that conversation, that experience, that thought that they've had, like I relate to. And that for me is like wildly powerful.
It's so nice.
It's so, yeah, transformational. Like hearing other people speak, seeing your, like I have this thing where we all have different like stories, right? We all have very different lives, different things happen to us. We have different experiences. But we all also experience the same things. We all also experience the same feelings. We experience the same hurts, the same grief, the same pain, the same joy within those experiences. And so we can see ourselves mirrored in those other women. And yeah, that's just wild.
Do people usually come like as friends, or are they like strangers when they get...
Sometimes, occasionally, probably actually more often than not, people come alone.
Yeah, I was thinking this and I was like, oh God, I'd have to come alone, because otherwise I'd say something and afterwards I'd be like, oh, that person's going to know this thing about me.
Yeah, or totally. Like, sometimes it feels safer talking to strangers,
I
right?
I think so.
But occasionally I get people come as friends. And what happens more often than not is people become friends.
Mm.
And then they come back and come back and come back and they get to know each other over time.
This is something I've only like discovered, I would say from like mid last year, I got into this like into community as a like as a conscious thing to think about of meeting new people. And even how we met, like we met through a volunteering day through Daisy. If anyone who's listened, Daisy came on and talked about like friendships in flux on the podcast. And I feel like the older I've got, the easier it is for me to like walk into a room and chat to someone and just be like open. We just grabbed a coffee after and like literally chewed the fat on like everything going on in life for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's such like a cathartic thing that, I mean, has that always been easy for you?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I think like as a kid, I was really good at making friends. I'm an only child. I have step siblings, but I didn't sort of grow up with siblings. And I just found it really easy to connect with other people when I was little. Mm. And then I think as I grew older, it became harder. I've always had like great friends, but I think something you were saying actually in the podcast with Daisy about sometimes you can feel really lonely in a group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can feel like you're the outsider and you're probably not, but in your head, in your mind, you're the person on the outside.
Mm.
Definitely felt like that growing older. And as I started to change, friendships changed and had to grieve friendships, let go of friendships, all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's a weird world to navigate, right? It's hard.
Like, it is. I also feel like it changes so much throughout your life. Like I was listening to Mel Robbins had like a podcast on friendship and she talked about how when you're a kid everything is set up to make friends.
Yeah, totally.
So like the birthday parties, kind of everyone gets invited to the birthday party, and like in school you're mixed up and you're sat next to different people, and then as you get older, by the time you're in like university, every time if you go to university, every time you go into a lecture you choose who you sit next to, and there's no like forced or encouraged mixing as much anymore. And it feels like as you get older and older, like those moments of being able to like just sit down and meet new people become more and more rare.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially like in the world we live in now where so much is digital and so much is, we live in such a like isolated society. Like Western world is so isolated. Like I don't know my neighbours, and I've lived in my flat for like, well, a little bit on and off during the lockdown, but for essentially over 10 years. I don't know my neighbours, don't know anyone else in my building, actually. Like, we have a group WhatsApp group, but other than, like, their name on the screen, I don't know their face. I don't know them. And that's wild. And it's part of, like, I'm sure we'll get onto it more, but it's part of why I think we're at this period of, like, reclaiming, like, community, reclaiming sisterhood, and why that is so important and, like, so needed, because we don't, like, humans don't thrive in isolation, but we've built a society that is built on isolation, built on rewarding, like, I did this on my own, or, you know, on, like, that sort of, like, isolated nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have, you know, your parents or whoever you live with, your partner, your kids, and that's it. That's your group. Whereas we used to live in communities, villages, like...
Multi-generational.
Yeah, totally. Like, all those, even when I was a kid, like all these aunties and uncles that are of no blood relation, but they're like your mum's best friend or like your second cousins, like whatever. Like we don't really have that anymore. And we need that. Like human beings, we thrive and we grow and we learn when we have community, when we have that.
Definitely. And I think women especially, I was reading this thing about how women, we release oxytocin in much higher levels than men do when in moments of stress. And oxytocin is the bonding like chemical, so it's that when we're stressed we release that, which makes us like want to go to other people and look for comfort. And I was like, that's so interesting. So there was this, I can't remember exactly what they called it, it was something like friend and bond or something, but how when you ring up one of your friends and you're like ranting about something because you're stressed, it actually chemically binds you two closer together. And I was like, oh, I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I feel like that explains a lot of like, because often in these spaces that I hold, like a women's circle or a women's retreat, especially the retreats, the longest I ever hold a retreat is like a week, but often they're like a weekend. So it's like Friday to Sunday. And you leave on the Sunday feeling like all of these women are your best friends and you've known them for life. And often they do like stay in touch and they end up being friends and meeting up and la la la, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, you leave like feeling like you've known these women your whole life. And I think, it could be partly to do with that.
Definitely.
Because you're sharing really deep stuff that maybe you've never told anyone before.
Mm. Is and that you the vulnerability?
Kind of, yeah, it's the vulnerability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess where you, like, I think both of us are now, it sounds like we're both kind of in a place where we find that maybe not necessarily easy, but comfortable to like meet new people and open up. And you said you did as a kid as well. But then it got harder. What was like the sticky time, or was there a sticky time when you were like, oh, I'm struggling with connecting to other women?
I think probably when I started like the journey that led me to this work.
Okay.
I think, which I was going to say to do in a nutshell, it's quite hard to do in
a nutshell. You know, whatever the opposite of a nutshell is.
It's quite hard to nutshell it. But essentially, about 5 years ago, my life like massively changed. I was working as like a musician and acting. I thought my life was good. I thought it was normal and that I was happy, quote unquote. Mm. But I was actually really, really unwell, living with like multiple eating disorders. Nice. Probably need like a trigger warning. living like multiple eating disorders, OCD, really unhappy. And beginning of, and no one knew, basically, which is kind of very stereotypical of people with eating disorders, that everything is in the dark, everything is secret, hidden.
From friends, from family.
Friends, family, partner, everyone. Wow. Not a single soul knew until I was 26. And my partner at the time had been through a lot of stuff as well. And he kind of picked up on it. And it all sort of came out of me. Like, I'm a terrible person, la, 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 la. And he was like, you have an eating disorder and you can get some help for that. But I wasn't ready for help at the time. Mm. Took me like another year. So kind of January of 2020, I was like, I'm done. Like, I can't live like this anymore. I have to get some help. Like, I was really scared of what was going to happen to me. And my life had become like so small because it just revolved around how I looked, what I ate, what movement I did, all of that stuff. Mm. So beginning of 2020, I finally started getting some help. And kind of began my like recovery journey as it was.
Yeah.
And I always say that because I hate saying like my recovery and then moving on to the next part, because it sounds like this wonderfully like easy thing. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who's going through that or might be listening, like, it is such a wiggly line of like forwards and backwards and maybe getting a lot worse and then maybe getting a lot better and like all these little trajectories. But yeah, sort of started that recovery. And then, as everyone knows, March 2020, we went into, you know, we had a pandemic, worldwide lockdown, or worldwide pandemic lockdown in the UK. And my work fell apart. So I was doing music full time. All of the music venues, pubs, clubs, etc., closed overnight. All my work was taken away. And actually, it was the biggest kind of blessing in disguise in that I spent the next 2 years basically recovering. And had that time to like devote to actually getting better. Mm. And with that sort of unraveling of my eating disorder and everything that was in that, it kind of like ripped my life apart at the seams, I guess, and unraveled everything that I was kind of, everything that I was carrying, everything that I thought I was, kind of was unraveled. And then there was like this gaping hole of like, well, actually, who the fuck am I? Underneath that, without that, like, who am I? What do I like? What do I want to do with my life now that I'm healing and getting better? And so I started teaching yoga, which I'd always loved but never done anything with. I eventually found my way to teaching sound, and then more and more organically, like, wanted to work with people in general, but especially women with basically, yeah, everything that I do now of like helping women to feel safe in their body, to feel safe in the world, I guess, like to find out who they are and to connect into that. And I think through that process, I'm very long-winded, journey and story, but through all of that unraveling of myself,
like a lot of my friendships unraveled and a lot of how I interacted with people kind of unraveled, because the me 5 years ago, like January 2020, I was like constantly wearing a mask. I was constantly trying to be what I thought other people might want me to be.
Right.
So a lot of my friendships, I mean, some of my friendships were obviously amazing, but a lot of my friendships were built on like this person I thought people wanted me to be, you know, like there was a barrier and a non-truth, I guess, you know, like people weren't ever getting to see the real me.
Right.
And so once the real me started to come out, or once I started to like question, who is the real me? What does she do? What does she like? Who does she want to be? Like, then sort of things started to unravel a little bit. And I think my friend the other day said the most beautiful thing. My friend who has been with me through all of this, like we've seen each other through everything. And she said to me the other day, like, sometimes friends that we have like, an idea in their head of who you are, and they won't let you change from that because they can't like compute the change. You are this person in their head. And so when you start to change or grow or deviate from the person they have in their head, they can't handle that.
Right.
And so your friendship like starts to disintegrate. And then there are other friends that you might have who are willing to like grow with you and change with you and like be inspired by you and yeah, inspire you and like allow that growth to happen. And that's like such a gift. But also, yeah, there will be friends that can't handle that. And I think a lot of my really close friends at the time who had seen me through all sorts of stuff before that, and likewise, like you do with friends, but they couldn't understand the change or they had an idea of me that I no longer was, and I couldn't go back in the box kind of thing. Right. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, and then I found it really hard, yeah, for a while kind of interacting with people because I was still navigating who I am. And so that's quite hard to show up in spaces and be like, make new friends when you're still navigating who you are.
Totally. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate like, it's obviously a vulnerable share to talk about that kind of stuff. And I think so many people will relate to that inevitably in your 30s, there is so much like taking off the mask and undoing things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a story that just comes up time and time again, like in this podcast, is that, yeah, that shaking off of, I thought I was this person and I changed and I wasn't anymore, and how friends react to it, how partners react to it, and how you can kind of implode your life quite easily by just being more yourself, which is crazy.
100%. It's wild, right?
Yeah. And it's such a journey of, I think that's kind of, interestingly, someone wrote into the pod, we asked like some questions, and someone said, how do friendship breakups differ in your 20s versus your 30s?
Mm.
And I really sat with this and I was thinking about it because I think I might be shifting into a potential breakup with one of my friends, which is really sad. But I was thinking about it and I was like, I feel like in your 20s, so much of friendship breakup feels circumstantial, of like you're leaving school or you're going to college, or you're going to college, you're going to universities, and kind of you end up in different places, or some of you move to London, some of you don't, some of you really like to party, then people kind of move on from that and the friendships kind of fall apart by circumstance. And I feel like the changes in your 30s, they can be so much more like brutal and hurtful because you know people are going through that discovery of self, and it's really hard to think like, you know, with this friend who I think we're really growing apart, I'm trying to be like, are they growing as a person? And that's amazing. And they've grown away from me, in which case, brilliant. I love that. But it also makes you think like, oh, what is it about me that they can't grow in my space? Or like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rough.
It is really rough. I think it's like friendships, for some reason, we as a society, we don't like value friendships in the same way that we value like a partner, I think often. Like, I've had so many conversations in the last probably 5 years, maybe, since I was like 27. Is that right? How old am I? Yeah, around there. With people, with women, pretty much, about, yeah, friendship breakups and how painful they are and how, like, life-altering and uncomfortable. And it's like a grieving process, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we don't like, it was something I never heard about until I experienced it for myself. And it was agony. And we never talk about that as a society. Like, we talk about breakups all the time. People write albums about breakups, make movies about it, books. We don't talk about like the pain and agony of like friendship breaking up, or yeah, often like your case, that it's like, is this person growing? Like, I'm so happy for them, but why can't I grow with them?
Yeah.
Like, why isn't there space for that in that friendship?
And I think also, like, the reason it's so painful in my view is that you often, the friendships are longer than any relationship. Like, without a doubt, you know, some of my closest friends, we've been friends since we were like seven. Like, I have no other relationship apart from my family who have been with me and gone through, maybe that's why it's more painful, because it's like you've gone through all these versions of yourself. And then it becomes a version where you're like, oh, it's not meshing anymore.
Yeah. And you talk about, like, with a friend, you talk about your partner. You talk about your relationships you've had. You talk about everything, right? Yeah. Whereas there's maybe certain things with a partner that you don't share, or they haven't been with you for those other things in your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's painful.
Definitely. I think we have talked a lot about, like, the difficult sides, but also the lovely sides of female connection.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a big elephant in the room of that there's a lot of reasons why it can be hard to make female friendships specifically. And I want to get into that, because I don't even know how we touched on this. Maybe it was just like in a little bit of prep for the episode. But I think inherently, as you move through life, the connection to other women can be really difficult, because it's often framed in this society of, I would call it like competition.
Yeah.
Do you relate to that?
Yeah. Hardcore relate to that. It's part of why I do a lot of the work I do. I think, like, I have this idea, it's probably not my own idea, but it's an idea that we're sort of like given an idea of what it means to be a woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're a child, from, you know, it maybe starts from the people around you, parents, aunts, family, close friends. And then as you, like, grow up in the world, friends at school, classes, whatever you do, football, dancing, la, 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 all the people you meet in the world. And then as you get older, it becomes like the media, society, magazines. I was going to say the World Wide Web. Child the of the 90s, web. The World Wide Web was when I was a kid. Now it's like social media.
Yeah.
You know, magazines, advertisements, patriarchy, like everything around, like, shapes what we believe a woman is and what we're allowed to be. And then I think we have this idea, it's like so solidified, because it's like a core belief, right? That you don't even realize it. Like, I think it's like osmosis of all this stuff you've picked up. Of, like, what it means to be a woman and what's right, and you know, all this stuff we hear and we all know of, like, you know, that a woman should be small and polite and should look a certain way and fit these ideal beauty standards and all of this stuff. And with that comes this inherent, like, competition and comparison and this, like, cattiness that I think women are, like, famed for. Like, that doesn't exist amongst men. Like,
right.
Men are never described as, like, catty or, like,
bitchy,
yeah,
gossipy,
all of that. Yeah. All of these words, they're so inherently, like, female. And I think it's a way of, like, controlling us, right? That we're so busy trying to fit into these ideal beauty standards, trying to fit into this size and shape that is womanly, that is female, that is sexy. And also we're so busy, like, tearing each other to shreds. And, like, ripping each other down.
Yeah.
We're so distracted by that that we don't see what's going on and what's happening underneath.
Completely.
And I think that's been the way that it has been for a very long time. But I think particularly for women who are now in their 30s, who grew up in the 90s, and all we ever saw, the only representation of a woman we ever saw, was, like, Kate Moss and Naomi Campbell. And, like, these stick-thin, heroin-chic supermodels, like...
Yeah.
On the telly, you know, look at the cast of Friends, like, they were the real women and they were stick thin, beautiful. Like, it was all we ever saw. And so it just, and all we ever saw on TV as well was women, like, arguing, competing. Like, it just is so inherently what we grew up with, I think.
Yeah.
Like the 90s magazines where you'd see a woman wearing the same bikini as another woman and it would be like, rate them.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, compare, like, how does this woman look in this dress? How does this woman look in this dress? Like, 9 out of 10, 7 out of 10. Like,
yeah.
It was constantly comparing us against each other.
And it's still so...
It's so ingrained, I think.
Ingrained, and also it's actually still really prevalent. Like, even though the Daily Mail, they don't do articles. Like, the things they used to say about women.
Oh, it's wild, yeah.
They'd use literally words like whale. Like, they would put that on their front cover. Like,
it would normally be a woman who's had a few kids. She's probably like 6 months out of having a baby. Yeah. She's on the beach having a lovely
time. She's
probably
like a size 12 or 14.
Yeah. But they still do it. I was watching one the other day.
It's horrific.
On social media, a pop-up came. I can never remember her name. She's like a TV host. Mm. There's two different TV hosts in the narrative, and they put the ages of both the women in, but not the age of the man in the story.
Yeah, yeah, they never do.
And I just commented underneath being like, oh, it's funny how they only put the age of the women. And so many people were like, well, because they're trying to get us to say like, well, this one looks better than this one, even though they're only 3 years apart. And it's so baked into everything that I think it's impossible. I mean, for myself, I always felt I was super, super skinny as a kid. Like people used to call me Skeletor. It was not in like a fun, like by the time I got to 18, people were like, oh yeah, Kate Moss chic, like love it. But when I was a kid, it was like, oh, eat a burger, like, you know, all this stuff. Mm. And I think inherently it made me like quite awkward with other women in that age, because I was always like, well, they're the pretty group, the popular group. Mm. Like, because of the way I look, I therefore can't be friends with that kind of person, which is a bizarre way to think.
Totally. I think we all, not only are we like judging ourselves for these things, like ripping ourselves apart, which keeps us really small and stops us like trying for stuff or putting ourselves into uncomfortable situations, we're also like judging each other constantly because of this set of standards that we have and that we believe are right. Like we're constantly like judging other women by that, like and shaming other women for those things.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking sad. And like, it is, I think the power of like, of sisterhood that I talk about a lot, and of female friendship and being in spaces with other women is that like that quite quickly dissolves when you are with other women. Because I think like I did a retreat last year that I was sort of, it was, I was holding it with a couple of other women that I hadn't met before. We'd like met through the beauty of sometimes social media is a great place to be. Mm-hmm. And that's how we met. And we were holding this retreat, and straight away, all the women that were on the retreat, it was in Croatia, it was beautiful, all stripped off and jumped in the pool. Mm-hmm. And my brain was like, well, you can't do that. Like it instantly was like, no, because like the fear of other women seeing me like without clothes was like, I'll just be judged, I'll be compared, I don't look like her. Like I was like judging and comparing myself. Like it was wild because I just stepped out of normal society with other people. Like first day I was like, can't do that, that's terrifying, being around other women and being seen. And that's as a woman who holds these spaces, like that it's so ingrained. And then quite quickly, like spending, you know, intimate long periods of time with these women, talking about our lives, our experiences, by the next day I'm like, hell yeah, get me in that pool. Like, because quite quickly that dissolves when you are actually present with other women, like listening to their stories.
Yeah.
We quite quickly realize that, like you said about the popular girls or whatever at school, if you actually sat down with those popular girls, which we don't do as teenagers, but if we actually sat down and listened to them, you know, this girl that we think has it all and is perfect, and probably the story that she shares is that she feels really insecure. She's, you know, afraid of X, Y, and Z. She doesn't think she's good enough. Like, we all have the same internal monologue, the same shit that we're dealing with, the same emotions that we're feeling, the same, like, lack of control or feeling like we don't belong somewhere.
Mm.
I think once you, like, peel back the mask or the layer or the thing that we think we are, and you hear those things, you're like, oh, actually, we're all in the same boat, like same really unfair boat. Like,
yeah. And you also, I mean, I found that when I was younger, I would put, if someone was like really good looking, for example, I would put like a negative trait on them. And I think it's something from society of like, I used to model when I was younger. And I remember once a casting director making a joke when we were in a casting. He said, well, Russian girls are like Ferraris with no engine. Like, beautiful to look at. There's nothing going on under the hood.
Well, isn't that what people say about models in general? Yeah. Like, this idea that, you know, beautiful but dumb or whatever. Like,
exactly. And I remember hearing that and being like, oh, that's really funny. And being like, then when people would ask me like, oh, well, you know, how is it like modelling? And I was like, oh, well, you know, like beautiful women, they're all just like, there's nothing going on. They're not interesting.
Mm.
And I was like, now when I look back at that version of myself, I'm like, it's, firstly, it's just so fed. It's like, it's fed from a competition point of view, I think, for men, because it's like, well, yeah, she might be really beautiful, but she's not smart, or she's really beautiful, yeah, but she's vain or whatever. It's like, and then you start to meet people as you move through life and you're like, oh yeah, I met this girl. She's like gorgeous and she's a lovely human being. And yeah, she actually is really smart. And actually I don't dislike her for that. Mm-hmm. I actually love her for that because she's all of these things and she's amazing to be around.
Yeah.
And then slowly, as you say, like exposure to different groups takes away the fear.
Yeah, it's like a threat, right?
Yeah.
It's a threat of like, when I was a kid, I used to dance with this girl who was like my best friend. And we were sort of at the same level. We were always in classes together. We always did stuff together. We'd do duets at dance festivals, la, la, la. We were best friends. Mm. And I remember like on the drive home from classes, like my mum being like, oh, well, you did this better than her name. I don't want to mention her name, but, and she'd be like, but you did this better than her, or she's better than you at this, or like comparing us instantly. We couldn't just be best friends who love to dance together.
Right.
Like it was like this idea that there's only space for one of you at the top, you know? And I think that continues into life and society. Like, oh yeah, women, we can have it all now. We're allowed it all now, but there's only space for one at the top. Like there can only be one of you. We can't all be good at the same stuff, or we can't all be like allowed to do things or be, yeah, beautiful and smart and kind and a nice friend. Like yeah, you can, because that would be threatening, right?
That's so interesting that like there's only space for one at the top. I think it was Paloma Faith on her podcast was talking about how she went into a record exec studio or whatever, and they said to her like, oh, we don't want to sign you because we've already got a quirky female singer. And she was like, well, you've got fucking six bands of white guys who make indie music. Like I think you can fit one more quirky female singer in.
Yeah.
And it is that idea of like being in a place of power as a woman is already a minority. It puts you as a minority.
Yeah.
So if you walk into a boardroom and there's like, I don't know, a female CEO and a female CMO, people are like, wow, two women in places. And you're like, well, this isn't
you
even...
You never say that about...
It's not 50% of the board, you know? And it is that like fight, I think, to get to the top, which I'm hoping is like a bit of a... and I think we're coming out of it. I'm hoping that it was a bit of a... There was no representation. And so
yeah,
it felt
a shift.
Harder
right?
to get there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a depressing point. Yeah. Now I think I'm starting to discover what I would call, or the language that I've learned is that people talk about like feminine energy and like divine power. Do you have like a way that you think of though, like what those things mean?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think definitely, like I was speaking about before, about having this idea you've been like given of what it means to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you start to like crack that open and be like, but is that what it means to me to be a woman? Or like, is that how I relate? Like, I know when I was quite young, like primary school age, like, I don't know, 7 or 8, I was really tomboy-y and I was very vocal about like, I hate pink. Like, I don't, you know, like I obviously had taken on this really strong idea of like, I don't want to be associated with what it means to be a woman because the idea that I could see at the time of what it meant to be a woman was like weak. And this idea of being like very girly, always in pink, like couldn't play games with the boys because it was too rough. Or I don't know. I'd obviously inherited this idea of like, it was weak to be a woman, which is so stupid. But that's what I had as a kid. And so I didn't want anything to do with that because that wasn't what I wanted. And so then like getting older, like I think reconnecting to what it means to be a woman in your own terms. And like that for me, I guess is, yeah, more connecting into like that feminine energy, divine feminine kind of thing for me has been like reconnecting to who I am.
Right.
And my own idea of what it means for me to be a woman, which is really none of the things I was told. Like,
yeah. Do you think all those like perceptions, and if you don't want to answer this, feel free not to, but do you think that that those perceptions of how people think about women was what played into like your relationship with food and like the eating disorder?
Yeah, massively. Massively, yeah. I mean, and that's when for me it all sort of unraveled and I started to think like, well, what does it actually mean to me? Because what I'd been living, like trying to be thin, trying to be whatever, you know, the attainable beauty standard, non-attainable beauty standard was at the time, like, it was making me incredibly ill, like, incredibly ill, trying to be small, trying to be perfect all the time, trying to please everyone around me, trying to be good and sexy and all of these things that I thought I should be as a woman was killing me, essentially. Like, yeah. And it's only through, like, unraveling that and healing that I then was like, oh, of course I'm fucking ill, because I've been trying to put myself in this tiny little box for my whole life. Like, so when I finally kind of stepped out of that, I think, yeah, that's when I was like, when you start to question it, I think is,
yeah. I feel like that's a really beautiful part of the Weird Years that probably doesn't get mentioned enough by myself on this couch, is that I think a lot of us are learning who we are if you shut off all of the noise. Like, to me, that is the ultimate goal of life, is like, if you didn't listen to your role to a partner, or your role to your children, or your potential future children, or your role to your work, like, if you were just you without any of that. And this is why I sometimes feel like men have such inflated confidence at points. It's because they've always just been like kind of accepted without having to be in context to anything else, like without having to be, you know, the dad or the wife or the girlfriend or the hot girl.
Yeah.
Like, just sort of.
I often do an exercise with the women in my circles where I get them to say, they'll go in pairs and I'll get them to say, I am, and list what they are, and they can't say their job. They can't say I'm a mother. They can't say I'm a daughter. They have to say, like, I am creative, or I am an artist, or whatever comes to mind.
I love that.
But to say it, yeah, without those labels that we carry around that define us.
I feel like for listeners, that's something, if you journal.
Yeah,
try it. If you journal, try it. Being like, I am.
Homework for this week.
Yeah, God, I would find that really difficult, I think.
Yeah, it's really challenging.
Developing like a strong sense of self is just difficult.
It's really difficult. Because it's like constantly changing as well and evolving, I think.
Completely. And like, that's probably why, you know, friendships and relationships do change so much and often do fall apart, is because we are ever evolving creatures. And I always say this about women, is that and this is not to bash on men, but I feel like women, because inherently in our biology, we go through such like cataclysmic changes. Like, if you choose to have children, it changes your whole biology, like your brain rewires, suddenly your existence, you have people relying on you in a way you never had before. And I think it's inherent that we are these kind of like ever evolving kind of beings. I like to think of it as like an ethereal energy.
Love that.
It sounds so like, a lot of people listening to it will be like, oh my God, you've been around Lauren too much, my coach. Yeah. But it's so true. It's like this ever evolving like feeling that you have to come into more of your own, because that's what life almost forces you to do.
Yeah, totally. I read this thing. I hate that I read it on Instagram, but I read it on Instagram.
I like that you didn't say, like, I read this book or I went to this lecture.
No, it was a quote I saw on Instagram. But it really reminded me of, like, because I really believe that we're, like, yeah, as women, I'm going to go on a tangent. But and I'm going to make it super woo. But of like energy, of like there's a difference between feminine and masculine energy, and that doesn't mean male, female, everyone is on a spectrum of that, and we need both of those things to coexist to be a balanced human being. But like masculine energy is very like linear, very kind of goal orientated, very structured, action oriented, and female energy is much more fluid, it's cyclical, it's like constantly moving, changing, just like we have cycles, right? And I read a quote that reminded me of that on Instagram that was like, why are you always expecting yourself to be the same or to be able to stick to things when you're a cyclical being? Like, as a woman, we are constantly in flux, right? Our hormones are changing constantly. We're evolving all the time. Yeah. We're changing all the time. And yeah, we are. We're super fluid. Like, as women, that's a part of our nature and like who we are, and I think we're always trying to fight against that because we're always trying to fit ourselves into the masculine structure of the world, like 9 to 5 and 7 days a week, and this kind of structure that as women isn't our natural state. We are in flux and flow, and I think the more you, or the more I've connected into that, the more I've connected into things like the seasons and the year and astrology and all of this stuff that we've talked about, the more I feel connected to that, like, kind of divine feminine or feminine energy or whatever you want to call it, like, myself, basically. Like,
yeah. I love that. I would love to know if, is there, like, rituals that you have now that you put into place to stop you kind of falling back into comparison or to just put yourself in a really, like, positive, grounded space now?
That's a great question, actually. It's really interesting. I think often it's like connecting into myself. So I do a lot of work with like embodiment. I'm currently training. I'm training to be a feminine embodiment coach at the moment, which is essentially all about, like I was just talking about, the structure of like feminine energy, masculine energy. And it's kind of the concept that, like, traditionally when we coach, it's from quite a masculine place of like, what's your goals? Okay, great. How do we get you here? What are the steps we take? So when you approach it from a feminine angle, it's like, okay, here's your goals. Lovely. Now let's get into our body and question, query, how does that feel in my body? How does that make me feel? Is that what I actually want? Or is it what someone else wants for me? Like, kind of about getting into our body essentially and like tuning in rather than out. And so for me, I think whenever that, like, whenever kind of competition comes up, or whenever just in general, like, I need to be more grounded, more connected, for me that is, really is tuning in, which generally I find through, like, often movement. And not really any sort of structured movement, like going for a walk is a very basic way, I think, of doing that, or tuning into my body, like with something like a body scan, like, you know, closing my eyes, bringing awareness to different parts of my body, and then sitting with how I feel. Dancing is like the best thing ever for that. And also great for like connecting to your feminine energy, dancing, moving your body in a way that feels free, like right for you. I'm like queen of the kitchen dance, you know. Shaking is also incredible.
Just literally being like,
literally shaking. That's, it's gonna sound mad on the podcast. No,
I love being shaken.
Okay.
I love being shook. Like, sometimes I'll make my husband shake.
Shake you.
And I don't know why. So, and he's like, you're bizarre. And I'm like, I know.
No, it's, you're regulating your nervous system.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's like an innate thing. My body's like, I just want to be shook.
You're regulating your nervous system. This is such a tangent for this podcast. Okay. Like, animals do it all the time, right? Like, you might have seen, like, your dog. I don't know if you have a dog, but like, dogs shake and stuff. Animals do it all the time. When they're scared, when they're, you know, scared, afraid, frightened, shocked, animals shake. And we as human beings, we've kind of lost that with evolution. But it's incredible for our nervous system. I'm trying to keep this quick, but like, when we enter like fight, flight, freeze, we never complete those cycles anymore. Because, you know, if you were being chased by a lion, for example, you would either, you know, you'd kill the lion, or you'd get back to your village and to safety, and you'd celebrate, and you'd mark that moment, and you'd process it in your body. And we don't do that as human beings anymore. Like, you run for the bus, you miss the bus, you're stressed. You get the next bus, you get to work late, you're stressed. You've missed your meeting, you're stressed. Like, we just pile on stress after stress after stress. And our body's storing that all. And so when we shake, or when we move our body, like lift heavy weights, go for a run is also great. But shaking's like a really quick way to do it, literally just to like shake.
Yeah, so validated in my weird
life. I love that. So your body knows that without having to be told. That's great.
Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up with our last segment. This is rapid fire questions. You can expand a little bit if you want to, but it's called yes or mess.
Okay,
so yes if it's like I'm into that, and mess if you're like, no, not for me.
Okay.
Okay, H&M selling feminist slogan t-shirts.
Mess.
The term girl's girl.
Mess.
Fair. Forgiving but not forgetting.
Yes. I think you can forgive someone, but you can still, hold on to it.
Oversharing after four margaritas, asking for a friend.
Yes. oversharing just in general.
Over a tea. So true. Yeah. We had like one coffee and overshared everything. And lastly, reclaiming the word coven.
Yes.
Fabulous.
Yes.
I'm glad we're in agreement on that. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You have brought dopamine to the beige couch.
Yes.
Lovely.